It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Gun violence is again consuming the news cycle after the fatal shooting of prominent conservative political activist Charlie Kirk on a college campus in Utah and a high school shooting in Colorado on Wednesday.
In 2025, there have been at least 100 incidents of gunfire on school grounds, resulting in 32 deaths and dozens of injuries. That's according to Everytown for Gun Safety.
When difficult stories like these dominate the headlines, it can cause feelings of sadness, fear, and even hopelessness. Our next guest says one fear can lead to another, which creates a vicious cycle of negative emotions.
So how do we take care of children's mental health in moments like this and find healthy coping strategies for people of all ages?
Travis Wright is a professor of counseling psychology in the School of Education at UW-Madison. Travis, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
There's graphic video of the fatal shooting of Charlie Kirk all over social media. The images, the commentary can be really upsetting, especially for young people. How can parents and teachers talk about this with kids?
So first, I would say we really need to be very vigilant about limiting children's exposure to media and social media. Right now, the images are re-traumatizing, they're disturbing, and it really makes it hard for children to get regulated and anchored and to feel safe again if they're being sort of overwhelmed by those images. So absolutely, this would be a great time for a social media diet. But then beyond that, I think we really want to first check our own feelings and make sure that we are grounding ourselves and that we are sort of in a place to listen and be responsive to our children's needs. We don't sort of want to inadvertently place our fears on them. Many times adults and kids are concerned about different things, even if we're responding to the same event. So making sure that we're grounded and in a good place is definitely the first part of being ready. And then, you know, once we're ready to have the conversation, I think we just open the space and, you know, ask kids what they're thinking and meet them where they are.
How do you feel about asking your child, what have your friends said about this?
I think that's a great question. You know what, you know, I think we should really try to avoid asking yes or no questions, because the goal is to open up the conversation and create the space for kids to talk. Sometimes kids are trying to figure out what they think, and what is really shaping their opinion is what their friends have said. And so that question, sort of gathering information about what are you hearing, how are other folks around you thinking about this, can be a great way to start the conversation. It helps the kids feel less on the spot. And then maybe the follow-up to that initial question is, so how are you making sense of all of this?
Our older teens may start to question and ask very direct questions like, am I really safe? How am I protected? And those answers require some digging and some vigilance, I would imagine. How do you address this with older teens?
Yeah. So, you know, we are living in a world and in a moment where safety, we can never promise someone that they're going to be safe. You know, this, we live in Mount Horeb, and so our children were in the schools in Mount Horeb when the shooting happened. And so for us, you know, when our kids say, am I safe? We can no longer say we live in a small town in Wisconsin, bad things aren't going to happen here. And so I think that, you know, what's much more important is that kids can trust us as people who are there for them. And so, you know, so I think being direct and honest and saying, you know, we can never guarantee that we're going to be safe every time we get in a car, every time we get on a plane, you know, anytime we leave our house, there is always a risk that something can happen. And so what's really important is that we do everything we can to keep ourselves safe. So we have a plan. These are, you know, this is what we will do if something happens. And I think that older children especially are able to understand that much of the violence that we're experiencing in the world now is actually because of hate and mistrust. And people are afraid. People feel sort of devalued, dehumanized, and that is actually kind of giving rise to, you know, to much of the violence that we're experiencing, sort of this polarization. And so one of the things that we talk about in our family and that I talk with, you know, one of the ways I talk about this with my students is saying, you know, how can we play a role in recasting this culture? How can we help to make sure that people are more That people feel safer, valued, respected. When people feel those things, they're much less likely to participate in violence. And so, the day after the shooting, our kids were not in a place to hear this. They just wanted to feel safe and they wanted to know how they were being protected. But over time, you know, as the fear has become less acute and the kids are more interested in how can I just feel safer in the world, how can I make sure that I don't have to get out of bed every day and view everyone as a potential threat, we have really appreciated the opportunity to talk with them about how do we actually see the best people? How do we become advocates? How do we sort of, you know, recognize when people might be suffering and help them sort of feel supported? And I think that, you know, as the kids have sort of experience that change in themselves, as they feel like they have more control over how they engage other people, that's actually helped them start to have more faith in themselves and others. They feel less powerless. They feel like there's something they can do. And I think, you know, longer term, that really is how we kind of change the culture that is giving rise to a lot of this violence. You know, when our response is to become angry or to feel more under attack or to view ourselves as being more under threat, you know, when we talk about retribution and revenge, that actually just keeps us in a place of fear, and that actually increases the likelihood that these events will happen again.
Travis Wright is with us, professor of counseling psychology in the School of Education at UW-Madison, as we talk about how to take care when difficult news is circulating, like this week's gun violence. Travis, trauma results from emotionally painful or abusive experiences. Can you talk about what trauma is and the different responses to it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when we think about trauma, there are sort of two types of responses. There's the physiological response and the psychological response. And the two criteria for something to actually be trauma is that it leads us to feel helpless or hopeless, and it overwhelms our capacity to cope. And so if we wonder if we are going to survive this or if we want to survive this, that actually creates these sort of physiological responses in our body that are hardwired. And those responses are fighting, fleeing, or freezing. So we, you know, fight back, we run away, we shut down. And so if you are watching your child or you're noticing yourself, you're having reactions that sort of can be understood through those lenses. You know, are you irritable? Are you sort of flicking off? Are you sort of running away or avoiding things? Are you procrastinating? Are you zoning out and daydreaming? Those responses are real clues that you are traumatized. And when you're traumatized, your body has some hardwired ways to respond. You feel hypervigilant. You're more distracted. You have a harder time sleeping. You're more likely to engage in conflict. And so the way that we sort of respond to those physiological shifts is to try to re-regulate that stress response system. So we have to soothe ourselves. We have to be really mindful about kind of de-escalating. So those deep breaths, exercise, sleep, meditation, anything that we can use to calm our nervous system really helps us return back to that baseline where we're viewing the world as a safe place and we're not feeling constantly under threat. Yeah. But psychologically, those wounds can last much longer. So when we, you know, are scared for our lives, we start to view ourselves as vulnerable. We tend to view other people as threats. We may feel less hopeful, less optimistic about the world or our future. And those things can lead to longer term consequences like depression or shame or guilt or low self-esteem. And those are the things that we really, you know, long after the exposure to the initial event, those consequences can continue to impact our lives.
I want to return to what you said about, you know, just the taking care with the regular exercise and sleep and food. How do established routines help kids feel more secure? And what's the connection there?
Well, you know, trauma by definition is when something out of our control and unpredictable makes us feel like our life is threatened. And so a really good antidote to that is introducing a lot of certainty and clarity around expectations. So especially for younger children, but for all of us, regardless of our age, having a clear routine can be a really wonderful way to feel more sure and certain. When one has experienced trauma, anything that's unexpected feels threatening. And so if we can maintain consistent routines and schedules and very clear, consistent expectations, that minimizes the likelihood that kids or any of us are going to have to experience something that catches us off guard. When we are caught off guard and we've been traumatized, we assume the worst, and it can put us right back into the fears that we were initially experiencing.
I want to land here on what could be a bright spot. There was a study from Harvard researchers finding that the percentage of public schools that screen for mental health issues has risen significantly in the past 9 years. Is that a bright spot for helping young people overcome mental health challenges?
I think it is a wonderful thing that we are taking more seriously the needs and the emotional lives of children. And the other thing I would say is that we cannot be strong, we cannot be resilient without also experiencing risk. And so just like a broken bone, you know, where the bone heals, it's actually stronger. The bone that forms in the break is actually stronger than the original bone. And trauma is just the same way. If it doesn't kill us, there's an opportunity there for it to make us stronger. And so the parts of us that have to heal often end up being the parts that we can count on the most when life throws us other curveballs.
Travis, thank you so much for the conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is Travis Wright, professor of counseling psychology at UW-Madison. He joined us with advice about how to talk with children when gun violence is in the news and what we can do to respond with care during moments of collective trauma.